Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Bigfoot, Ground Zero, the science behind the sighting. Contact the show. Email BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com.
All right, you are listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. My name is Dave. As always, thanks so much for listening. I know there are a ton of things you could be doing, so I appreciate the fact that you join us on Saturday nights. We're here at 8 p.m. If not, you are downloading the show, obviously, taking us with you. Appreciate that as well. A couple of housekeeping things before we get started. We have relaunched the Bigfoot Ground Zero Facebook page, so just find us Bigfoot Ground Zero. We're going to post the shows as they happen, or you can go on blogtalkradio.com. Look for Bigfoot Ground Zero and just hit the follow button. Every time we have a new episode, you will be notified. But we're pretty much doing this every week. Feel free to check in, join the chat room, and just kind of do your thing there. I will be moderating, or Carl, and we will definitely answer your questions there. So finally, you can also find us on Stitcher, the podcast app. A lot of you folks have asked about that, so I went ahead and got us on Stitcher. We are looking to get on iTunes as well, so that might take a little bit of time. iTunes has a process to get that done, so definitely appreciate you checking in. Tonight, we've got an interview with Stacy Hostetler. I don't often do these sighting shows, simply because it's really hard to get people who are, I wouldn't say credible, but in my mind, I have to be very sure of the sighting or the experience in order to put it in front of you. We just don't do sighting shows. There's a lot of shows that do a really, really good job at that. And kudos to them, but we're taking a different angle, as you know, the science behind the sighting. So we'll talk about a lot of things around Sasquatch as far as research, as far as, you know, probabilities. We do some what-ifs because you can't be 100% sure of everything. These things have not been, researched by science. But we're learning more and more as time goes by. So tonight, Stacy Hostetler is the guest. And he was part of what I will call a dynamic duo in a podcast called Bigfoot Tonight Show. And Stacy and Chuck Prahl, Chuck who has since passed on, unfortunately, great guy, definitely a driver behind that show, was all in, loved the topic, and his passion kind of got me excited about possibly doing a Bigfoot show as well, right? And so they were definitely the inspiration. And so I feel privileged to have Stacy on the air with me tonight. I'm not trying to turn this into hero worship by any means, but they definitely deserve some credit because, you know, they were there before a lot of these bigger shows out there were doing their thing. So, you know, they were getting all the scientists and some of the known names out there, the guys from the Olympic Project. I know there was, I believe they had Dr. Meldrum, Mayan Zisky was on, a couple of others. I know I'm missing some, Derek Randles for sure, and David Ellis. But I wanted to give Stacy an opportunity to talk about his sighting, and the reason I did is because he is very reluctant to do so. That to me is, I don't know, that's an indicator. If somebody's really reluctant to do it, that's when you kind of want to push people to tell their story, because a lot of times you're going to get a credible story, you're going to get somebody who's matter of fact, you're going to get true emotion out of them, and you'll hear Stacy when he's telling his story. There will be a couple of times where he, I don't want to say settles himself down, but kind of pauses, talks about how he's getting a little bit too excited. You can hear it in his voice. I will interject questions where I feel like, you know, it's necessary because people are going to email me with, well, how do you know this and what if that and why didn't you ask him this question? So bear with me as I do that. But I wanted to bring Stacy on for a multitude of reasons, but Anyway, so without any further ado, let me turn it over to the interview. We'll look forward to that, and then on the back end, I might play a couple of sounds that we recorded at the OP expedition a few weeks ago. Maybe. That's a teaser to stay through, isn't it? Anyway, again, I'm Dave. This is Bigfoot Ground Zero, and let's get started. All right, as promised, I am here with Stacy Hostetler. Are you there, Stacy?
Yes, I am.
All right, thanks for joining us. For the folks of you who don't know who Stacy is, he was half of a dynamic duo of Bigfoot Tonight Show, which I had found on Blog Talk Radio originally a few years ago, and it had been running. I think your program had been running, you know, prior to some of the other Bigfoot programs out there, and it was you and it was Chuck Prawl, and I think you guys worked exclusively. I don't think you had anybody else there, but yeah, what a great run. I know for those of you who don't know, Chuck Prawl had passed away, which pretty much was the end of the program. By the way, Stacy, I still go back and I listen to a lot of the shows because there were so many I can keep recycling through them. But tell us a little bit about that show, how it got started, how you met Chuck, you know, and just kind of the whole nine. Just I'll give you a few minutes to kind of roll that all together.
Yeah, I had I actually met Chuck originally through Tim Stover. I don't know how many people actually know him. He's with the Ohio Bigfoot Hunters on Facebook. And Chuck and Tim actually had a previous Bigfoot show. Mm-hmm. And I think that ran for about a year. But we three were all friends. We had become friends after I had my sighting in March 2009. And through Tim, I got in contact with Tim the summer of 2009. He had been putting up YouTube videos and was kind of known in the northeastern Ohio area, and he was one of the few people I got in contact with after I had my Bigfoot sighting, just for somebody to talk to and kind of go over, you know, what happened to me. And we just kind of hit it off as friends, Tim and I did, and then I know Chuck, I forget exactly where Chuck came in there time-wise, but Tim and Chuck had done their, I'm not sure if they even had started on their show at that point or not. I think they were on for a total of a year, year and a half. I could mm-hmm. be wrong exactly. But, yeah, we just, that's how Chuck, Tim, and I ended up meeting. I ended up meeting Chuck through Tim Stover. Mm-hmm. And then Chuck and Tim kind of fell out of just doing their show. And Chuck and I kind of, you know, it was Chuck's idea to start another show of his own. And that's kind of where I kind of came in. So if I do recall correctly, it was definitely Chuck asking me, because Chuck was the one that pretty much did most of the homework. He talked to a lot of people. I think I was there just for the
yeah,
for the ride, so to speak. But it was fun. I, you know, it was just it was fun meeting all these people. I guess maybe I'd go to the Ohio Bigfoot Conference and some of the local conferences in PA and meet a lot of some of the other speakers and people that we had. Mm-hmm. on the show, but Chuck didn't get out as much as I did, just, you know, socially with a lot of the people that were
sure.
in Bigfoot. But Chuck did all the legwork. Boy, he just read anything he could get his hands on and did all the homework. He probably did easily 90% of the work for the show.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that, because about him, just, and he was very approachable, very available, I think is the word, right? So I emailed him on the website, you know, multiple times, and he didn't mm-hmm. know me from Adam. He was more than happy to, you know, have the conversation. So definitely the passion was there. Now, you had the sighting, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But, you know, having had that sighting, I guess before we get into it, you've had this discussion with me. I kind of know what you're going to say in a way, but what's changed? Is there something that's changed about you or the way you view things after seeing so closely something that's not supposed to exist? Kind of bring us into your world as far as that goes.
Yeah, that one's kind of a big one. I mean, I was pretty much always the skeptic. My wife and I would take our kids camping, Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'd put the kids to bed and we'd sit around the campfire talking. She always believed in Bigfoot, and her father was kind of the same way, and I'd make fun of them.
Yeah.
That's pretty much where I sat. I was pretty much the ultimate skeptic. I mean, I don't think there was probably too many people I've met yet that were as bad as I was. But, you know, I was always in the woods only for hiking's sake. I did it for exercise. It was one of those things. Some people do bicycling. Some people do their cars, motorcycling. Hiking was my gig. That's what I enjoyed doing. And up to that point, I probably hiked a fair amount of Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia for a good 10, 11 years at that point. And I can only recall one other time looking back that maybe something might have happened, and that happened actually when I was up in Michigan one time. But I didn't see her really hear much. But the sighting I had in 2009, yeah, that one kind of changed me.
Now, we're going to get into that, and I know the audience is like, Dave, shut up. I want to hear the encounter. And believe me, we're going to get to that. As a skeptic, when you would tease your wife and your father-in-law, what was it that you used to say to them just to get their goat? And maybe you really meant it, but from the other side, now that you've had the experience, what was that like looking in at, you know?
Well, I mean, one of the things I always used to get them, really rib them about was, I'm like, you know, we've pretty much found everything. I mean, especially in North America. I mean, come on, you can't expect me to believe something that large is running around undiscovered,
right.
You know?
Right.
Which a lot of skeptics, you know, it's pretty much their same argument for the most part. Some come at it from a different angle, but that's pretty much it. And, you know, and to me it made total sense, you know. I mean, but I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't believe at that point much in UFOs either. So I'm kind of on the same page as far as I was a real diehard skeptic on just about a lot of other topics, not just Bigfoot.
This will change it, though.
Yeah, I mean, it might be because I got my bachelor's degree in biology. I got my bachelor's degree in nursing. And, I was very science-oriented. I'd worked on my chemistry degree for a while. I was very, I analyze and hash things out. I mean, before I buy a car, I look at reviews online for 2 or 3 months before I even go.
Right,
that's
right.
Just the way I am. And it's like, I don't just, you know, off the cuff go and do something really, you know, like that. But I mean, I'll analyze something to death. And for me, it was just like, I don't know how you people get around us even thinking that something like this could even exist.
Now that's a perfect observation about science itself, right? So do you feel like maybe you were getting in your own way, or do you feel like, no, I was being the pragmatic scientist, and until something was proven to me, I didn't have a right to believe in that. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was for me. I analyzed, and there's still other things in life that I've come across that people have shown me in other areas, even just with family-related stuff. And I'm like, no, I don't believe that such and such about a person until you show me some concrete evidence,
sure.
You know? And it's like, that's just my scientific brain, if you're going to call it that. That's kind of the route I go with my thinking. I mean, and there, like I said, everybody's angle is different, and everybody's got a little bit more, it's a lot of it depends on your upbringing, and a lot of it depends on your basic education and kind of the way you kind of view things. But the biggest thing is, you know, when you're especially a biology major like me originally and always stayed in the sciences, you know, animals especially were always a huge part of my life. So it was like, you know, dude, I know where exactly where everything is supposed to go.
Right, right.
And, and you're like, where do you put something like this when it comes across your path when you're out hiking? You know, you just don't even know what to do with it.
Well, don't you think that maybe this is a good thing because maybe it's given you kind of a sense of wonder again that you might have lost?
It just completely changed. I mean, it's actually changed my approach just even when I go into the hospital to work most of the time I do intensive care nursing, but it's like,
sure.
It fundamentally has changed me just even, I'll even lean as far as medicine goes to a much more natural approach compared to some of the antibiotics and medications we use now. And I see,
so see
I see so, things naturally that work now that you're like, I was a complete skeptic on.
See,
and
now
think,
this has yeah. changed you then.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
When you say there's so many directions, what you're telling me right now is this is the one main vein of thought process that's definitely changed in you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not just changed just in, you know, the way I look at science or, you know, the potential for Bigfoot or something like that.
Right.
It changes. I can't tell you how many natural things I've used that actually worked for me medically that I would have completely blown off 4, 5, 6 years prior. So you just sit there and you're like, wow, this stuff is legit. People aren't lying about this stuff, you know.
Yeah,
but you get it's a brainwashing that you get as you get indoctrinated when you get in as a nurse and get into the medical system and stuff. Doctors don't really believe in a lot of this natural stuff, and I'm like, you know, you just kind of get brainwashed after a while, and that's kind of the same thing when you're growing up. So,
well, plus too, you get an education, you pay a lot for the education, you need to believe in what you're taught because it's an institution that is definitely making you smarter.
Sure.
But, you know, you have to walk out and say, okay, I've earned this education. And, you know, I know a lot of people that don't think outside of that. So, I mean, good for you for that. But, you know, so there you are. You're on the trail. You're hiking. Now, you are alone at this point, correct?
Yeah, I am.
All right. So bring us into your world as to where you are, what time of day it was. You know, set up the scene so we can all get around the campfire and start eating the popcorn.
Yeah, it was... I think I got out there around at the trailhead. I would estimate 9:15 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
this is a park in eastern Ohio. It had been the first time I had been on this particular trail.
Right.
And what I would typically do, even when I went hiking, I would just pick random parks around Ohio and western PA and go. You know, just mm-hmm. for the sheer enjoyment of being out in nature. So I got this trail, parked at the trailhead with my truck, like I had done so many times after the fact. No one was in the park. It was a nice 40, 41 degrees. I loved hiking between like 40 and 60 degrees. It's just perfect for me.
Yeah,
I like it on the cold side.
Yeah, me too. And
you know, it was March, and here in Ohio, it's, you know, you're just coming off a winter, and you know, you never know what you get in March with Ohio weather, so it's all over mm-hmm. the place. But I remember the leaves being really crisp on the side of the trail, a little soggy in the trail from some of the previous melting snow from previous days, and you know, I just put my backpack on. I had thermos with me and some of my other stuff with me, some granola bars and the such, and I just took off hiking, you know, did some stretches and took off hiking. Nothing was unusual when I parked at the trail. I didn't hear anything. I didn't get any sixth sensations whatsoever mm-hmm. that some people describe. So I started hiking. You know, I probably went 2/3 of the top of this trail. This trail comes off of the back of a campground area, and I was heading along the top of this ridge, and I was probably 2/3 of the way down the top of this ridge, and there was just something that made me stop, I remember, and I can't even really recall really what it might have been. And a lot of people are like, well, there's your sixth sense kicking in. You thought, well, I'm like, well, maybe it might be. I stopped at one point, and I remember looking at my map of the trail. It zigzags. It goes to a point down at a group of hemlocks at the edge of the trail, and it starts zigzagging down to this ravine. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And something just made me want to step off into the woods, into the wood line. And I took two pretty large steps into the tree line. And as I took my second step, it was like a loud crunch, crunch, because it was just crisp winter leaves. I mean, it really made a decent amount of noise.
Mm-hmm.
And all I remember was as soon as I hit that second step, something got up off the ground. You could hear it rustling down in the ravine. And I supposed at the time it was on the trail as it was going down into the ravine. And it got up and just, you could hear it just running, moving like a freight train down the trail. And it was very noticeable. And it immediately made me jump back onto the trail.
Right,
it did startle me.
Yep.
And I've been hiking everywhere. I've come across real large bucks and other deer. Had no bear or anything else out of the ordinary. But large deer that, you know, you walk past them and you're, man, boy, you don't even see them moving. They startle you, you know. Mm-hmm. They're eyeballing you as you come by. But, you know, I didn't see anything, didn't hear any other noises. I just heard something really moving down this trail. And so, like I said, jumped back on the trail. I stopped there for a couple minutes, and I don't know exactly how long it was. And I'm like, why? It's just, you know, I remember it really kind of shaking me up. But I'm like, no, I'm just, okay, let's just go. Book it. Let's go. I'm not going to, not gonna bother me. I'm out here for some exercise. So I get all the way down to the edge of this trail, down to this group of hemlocks on the top of this ridge. And as soon as I get to the point, as it's turning, it makes like a 90-degree turn to go down into the ravine. Something from way back on the trail, I hear these three loud whistles. I mean, just right in a row. Don't think anything of it, because it doesn't, I mean, you hear bird sounds all the time, but I'm not analyzing bird sounds here. I'm not thinking anything weird. And then 9-10 seconds later, way down in the ravine, another three go off and answer this. And this is me analyzing this afterwards, because I wasn't thinking this at the time. When I hear whistles out in the woods, or I'm just thinking birds, I totally blew it off. And sorry, even when I think about it, I get real jumpy. So if I'm going I still think about it 8 years later, and I'm
well,
like,
you told me that time yet there was like you felt there was a period you needed therapy. You remember
yelling
into the phone to your wife that this is real, this is real. I mean, she's like, see, told you. Anyway, sorry, you got you off track there.
Yeah, no, it's fine. And you know, I blew off the whistles, like I said. You know, it's March. You know, a lot of the birds aren't even around or out. It's 9:30 in the morning, so
right.
The sky was real blue. I mean, it was the sun was starting to come up. It was one of those nice, crisp winter days that I just love to hike. And I'm like, okay, forget this. I mean, it did kind of throw me off a little bit. I remember thinking of the whistling, but I'm like, I really didn't analyze it a whole lot because, like I said, they were just sounds to me.
Right.
And so I'm like, I stopped for a second, and I just proceeded my way down to the trail. And I wanted to try to get somewhere on the trail where I thought I heard that whatever it was down in the ravine moving, because I was still curious as to what the heck it was.
Okay, can I ask you a question about that real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Because my skeptic brain would say to me, okay, why would he want to go to where that huge noise was? People are going to ask that in their mind, so I'm just kind of throwing it out there right now.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I don't mind asking. You know, I really didn't put much into it. I kept saying over and over again in my head, it's a large deer, large buck or something like that, which I've come across. So I'm like, I'm not thinking the thing is going to maim me if I come across the thing again or anything, you know. But, you know, of course it could. It has happened to hunters before. But
right.
I'm just not thinking that. I just was, you know, I had driven. This area takes a while for me to get to. It's a good solid hour drive for me.
Okay.
And I wasn't really going to be deterred. So it was like I was just there for exercise, and there was no analysis going on here, not at least as far as my scientific brain goes, until after the fact. And I'll just be honest with you, and there wasn't really much thought about it. I just kind of wrote a lot of stuff off.
Sure.
But needless to say, I made my way down into the ravine, and it was a couple hundred foot walk down to where I thought I heard whatever moving. And looking down at the ground, put my backpack on the edge of the ravine, on the edge of the trail, and was looking at all the leaf clutter behind me on the hillside.
Right.
I was there 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes, something like that. I don't know the exact time. And was looking for any disturbance on the ground. I didn't see anything. Not a thing. Nothing on the hillside behind me. And I said, screw it. Whatever it was, it must be gone, whatever. So I turned around, picked up my backpack, slung it over my shoulders, and took my first step. And, man, I tell you what, when I took my first step down into the ravine, that's when it happened. I'm looking at about a 45-degree angle on this trail down into the ravine, and up on the ridge from where I was previously at on the trail comes, man, I just see a huge white flash go through the wood line. I mean, it was wow.
Yeah,
I saw it out the peripheral. You know, you can see movement a lot better sometimes from your periphery.
Absolutely,
and,
100%.
You did. So, you know, my eyeballs are pointing down, but I can still see my peripheral areas pretty doggone well, and I could see the upper portion of this trail from where I was at previously. And I tell you what, it got my attention real quick because it was just nothing. My one side of my eyeball, it was just one white blur. And by the time I swung my head up over my right shoulder, that thing stopped right dead between two trees. And I had something huge, furry white from head to toe looking at me, eyeballing me, and I'm down basically the top of my head's at its the level of its feet because it's above me on top of the trail. And,
all right, so take us to that very moment of thought. Your oh shit moment.
Yeah, like, you're just like, you can't even, I just, there's no way to describe it to somebody. I mean, it's like fear of God just goes through you.
Right.
You're just like, I mean, I'm even getting a little uneasy just even talking about it because it still gets me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when I'm the ultimate skeptic and I don't think Bigfoot was always in the back of my mind because we always went camping and Teresa, my wife Teresa, would always be like, "Well, what about the footprints? What about all the other stuff people find?" And I'd be like, "Well, yeah, you know, I'd be just like every other skeptic. Somebody could be wood, you know, could be wood carvings and stamping them out. You know, I'm not doing
sure.
any analysis on these things." And I'm eyeballing this thing. It looks like I can't see its face because it's got like white dreadlocks or something coming almost down over its face. I described it to everybody I've talked to. It looked like a sheepdog.
I was going to say, I think you mentioned that one time before.
Yeah,
that's a good analogy.
That's exactly what it looked like. I mean, if you look at a sheepdog with all that white or whatever colors they are, you can't see any facial detail. It's just a big, it's like if you took one of those old-fashioned mops and just stuck it on its head. You know,
sure.
Those old-fashioned white mops and, that's exactly what it looked like. but I tell you what, man, I saw that thing, and it was tall. And, man, I know it was pushing 8 feet. That was just
wow.
My guesstimate. But, I mean, I could be off. But I went back later, and I know exactly where I was standing. My wife forced me to go back into the woods 3 days later to take, because she was just curious as heck. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
I cannot step foot in these woods again. You know, and I remember going back to the exact spot and measuring between the looking at the vantage point I had between the two trees, because the two trees weren't exactly next to each other. One was diagonally behind the other back. But from my vantage point, it looked like it was between these two trees. But the one tree actually technically would have been behind the creature.
Oh, I see. I see. So
but
it was
from
kind
my
of
vantage
like
point,
down line
yeah.
from you, and then the trees
yeah.
weren't next to each other.
But
gotcha.
From my vantage
okay.
point, it was between the trees.
Mm-hmm.
But from my vantage point, I know roughly where I was standing. I mean, this thing, shoulder-wise, once I got to the shoulders, that's the thing that was impressive to me. I was like...
How long do you think you were standing there looking at it?
Yeah.
Because it sounds like a minute.
Well,
I mean,
initially, I've told most people some 12, 15, 20 seconds. And then, I mean, it seems like an eternity for that time frame. And then that's when I immediately remember, I've got to start moving. And all I thought about was getting back to my truck. And my problem, the first thing that went off in my head was get back to the truck. You got to start moving. And I've got to go up the trail and come back past that thing. And it's up on the trail where I was previously.
Okay.
We just swapped spots.
Yeah, that's it.
So you're like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, and now I've got to actually, you know, my legs feel like jelly. And I've got to make an actual attempt to make it up, I mean, make it up this incline to get back to up to where it's level. It's up on level ground. I'm the one down in the ravine partways. And I just started marching. I just remember, boom, I just kept going. And I kept my as I was going uphill, I kept my head eyeballing it the whole way up over my left shoulder. Until I finally got up almost to it, you know, I was about 40, 50, 60 feet away from it as I went farther up to get up on level ground coming up out of the ravine. It slowly got farther away from me. So I actually had to watch it while I was walking uphill over my left shoulder.
Mm.
And as soon as I got up on the level ground or very close to it, I remember seeing it move. I saw the first two steps. It just bolted and went the opposite direction down the ridge.
So as people say, They are fairly quick.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, when I saw the blur, I know roughly where I saw it come into my periphery. And I'm like, that thing had to have covered 100 feet in, like, no time. And I'm talking, and this is through the wood line. I'm not talking, it wasn't on the trail. It was actually through the, on the, you know, it was actually 10, 15 feet into the wood line on the same trail, parallel to the trail I was previously on, up on the ridge.
Now, did it stop on a dime?
Oh, it was like boom. As soon as I laid eyes on it, it was like an immediate stop. And what I can still not figure out after I go through it, and you've got mostly wet leaves on a trail. When I heard it move initially, it made such a loud noise going downhill. But then when we swapped spots, it's running along the really crisp leaves that I had a hard time not making a loud crunch on.
Really?
And I'm like, it made no sound at all. And I don't even understand how that is even possible. Even if you brought your feet down a different way, I don't know how that's possible. That's the one out of my encounter, the one thing out of my encounter that just absolutely baffles me, because, and I apologize if I go too fast, because I get really excited when I talk about it.
No, that's okay. You know me. I'll slow you down. I'll back it up. That's my job.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
It just gets me revved every time I think about it. My heart still breaks. It's just me thinking about it.
Well, let me take you further back to that spot. And I don't mean to give you post-traumatic stress.
Oh, no,
I'm not making a joke about that, by the way, folks. I don't need to get, you know, hate email that I am, and I'm not. Because I would say that, Stacey, on some level, you did probably experience that.
Oh, I did for months afterwards. Absolutely.
So now, going back to that spot, and you probably thought about this, did you feel like you were, like this thing was endangering you?
No.
Or looking back on it now, would you, okay, if this ever happens again, I'm going to back away more slowly, I'll still have this shit scared out of me, but I'll know what to do. How did you feel?
No, I mean, that one I can absolutely tell you without it. I mean, I didn't get any, things getting ready to jump on me. It could be, I'm telling you what, my wife dragged me into the woods, and we measured, I know exactly where I was standing and roughly where I was, and we measured the area roughly about 35 feet away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty darn close.
Right.
You know, and I'm telling you what, if it wanted to, it could have been on me in two steps probably, three steps maybe at the most, especially coming downhill. And
you just hear about the speed of these
things.
It's one of those things where it's not even worth it for you to try to run.
It's not. It's
best to walk away. Like, what are you going to do?
I mean, it would be best not to sit down on the ground and probably suck your thumb, probably. I hate to say it that way, but.
Well, let me ask you this then. So you heard two whistles.
Three whistles.
Three whistles.
Mm-hmm.
Were they three different directions, or were they two kind of different directions?
No, I heard three distinctly coming back from the direction I was coming back towards my truck.
Right.
So
okay.
What I ended up after I analyzed this whole encounter and got my brain wits together about it, I'm like, okay, this thing went all the way down the trail and then went way up the hill and back,
mm-hmm.
back, followed me down the trail basically. And, you know, the thing that was scary about it, it made the whole encounter really bad, actually even worse to go over again, is the fact that there were three whistles that answered it down in the ravine. So that probably suggests that there was another creature there someplace. And doesn't give me a whole lot of comfort, I got to be honest with you. That made me and my back was turned to it as I was having an encounter with this thing. My back.
You gotta wonder.
Sorry.
You gotta wonder if you get the whistle as you're going down the ravine. Geez, was that a warning? And then something else is whistling behind me, and is one circling to see what I am? And the whole scenario probably went through your mind afterwards. That's got to be a little unsettling.
Oh, it was completely. When I went over this in my mind again afterwards, you know, you just like. I mean, I don't know if other people have this with Bigfoot encounters, whether you're a skeptic or not. Prior. I don't think you can actually. My wife constantly teases me all the time about this. She goes, "Oh, I want to see one." She goes, "I'll be fine and dandy if I ever see one." I'm like, I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. Because you think you're prepared, and I'm not saying like I was prepared at all, because obviously I was the skeptic. But I mean, think. I've talked to a lot of people that are like, "Oh, I've been looking for it for years. I've only found, you know, they haven't had an actual visual encounter." And then you talk to some people that have had the actual close-up ones, especially during the daytime hours, like I did. And it doesn't matter if they're, you know, like in my situation, I didn't get any bad feelings from this creature at all. It was purely me freaking out over something that truly should not be there. That
right,
was the fear.
Right.
I mean, and I told people, I said, fear-wise, level-wise, you might as well take me in a chopper and drop me in the middle of a pride of lions. That's the kind of fear I had. Literally.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, be careful.
You know, and these are the people that want to.
Yeah.
And you didn't even believe it, you know. And, you know, it's kind of weird. I liken it to, you ever seen that movie Contact with Jodie Foster?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. You know, at the end, you know, Matthew McConaughey is the Baptist preacher,
sure.
Really good looking, knows all the right words to say, unlike me in any respect. But it's that movie was, now she goes into this time capsule or whatever, and she sees what she sees, and now she's this atheist and all this. And at the very end of it, you know, he says to her, "Oh, you expect us to believe what you say going on faith?" And so now it's one of these things, as a skeptic, you've had this sighting and you're trying to tell people, and it's like you're on the other side of it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Did I draw the right analogy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's gotta be strange, because now it's almost like, oh, okay, you're right, you're right. I know I said all those things.
Yeah. I mean, you just sit there and think about it and you're like, yeah, I know I'm on the other side of the coin now, you know? And it's just, you know, and don't get me wrong, there are plenty of people that pull the wool over people's eyes and are making up their sightings and not, you know, falsifying stuff. It's not like that stuff doesn't. And I understand people being skeptical, especially when you're more into it, you've been into it longer, unlike me. I just kind of got pulled into it.
It ran.
But there's a lot of people to get into it for 4, 5, 6, 7 years before they even find anything even tangible. And
can you tell when somebody's full of crap? When I tell you a story,
I'm telling you what I won't say it to a lot of people. I'll just kind of walk away. But there are certain nonverbal cues. I mean, if you're a good studier of just body mechanics and body language,
yep.
I mean, especially
yep.
when most of, you know, what do they say? Typically 70, 80, 90% of most of human communication is nonverbal anyway. A lot of
non-verbal.
Times.
Nonverbal. Right.
Yep. And if you study that, and there's, you know, I've had access to a lot of those things through a lot of the science, working towards my couple degrees and stuff, and you get used to interviewing people and stuff like that, and you're like, yeah, I can tell when you're pulling my leg, you know, you're just, or you might have even had a sight. There's just certain things that, you know, things people do with their eyeballs. Way they shift.
Micro expressions are a big deal too.
They might shift their head a certain way. Most people, when I tell it happened actually when I told my encounter to somebody last week at the Bigfoot conference, Ohio Bigfoot conference.
Mm-hmm.
I told them it still happens about 50% of the time. Now, if I tell you my encounter all the way through, you'll see all the hairs on my arms go completely straight up. And
that's
not something you can control. I can't just, you know, okay, let's try and fake somebody out and say, oh, here, make my hairs go straight up. That doesn't happen.
Right.
And
right.
Unless you've been really freaked out, so to speak. And but that's the kind of thing. And I'll be like, yeah, there's my two arms. I'm like, I don't need you to believe me. I don't expect you to believe me. You can hear my encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to believe me, that's fine and dandy. I know what I saw.
So how long did that walk out of there?
Oh gosh.
how long did it normally take, and how long did it really take?
That walk is normally from that point in the ravine, if I just normally walk up that little bit of a hill and then back to the truck, man, that probably is at the most is six, not even actually maybe a 5 minute walk. Maybe.
Yep.
So
and you made it in 30 seconds?
Oh,
or?
I don't remember the exact time. It seemed like an eternity because there's a trail that V's off of the main trail that I was coming down that I was absolutely sure the creature went down.
I was just going to say, when you're walking, that something's going to pop
out
on the side.
Yeah, I was sitting there.
The worst feeling
ever. I wasn't running because the whole left side of me going back to my truck was where I know for a fact this creature ran. Or at least with the initial shot in the direction it was going. You know, so the whole left side of the trail was me looking over my left shoulder and just eyeballing every tree, everything as I made it, was trying to make it back to my truck. So, yeah, I just think that was definitely the longest walk I've ever taken. Once I got to my truck, it was just, oh my.
Yeah, so you closed the door of your truck. You probably threw the backpack in, sat down in the truck, made sure the doors were locked twice. Did you feel safe in the truck, or
not at all? But I got to be honest with you, there were several times I made the attempt to try to actually depress the brake, and just to start the truck, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah,
I sat there. I sat there for. My wife had me on and off the phone several times because we had not the best reception out where this park is located. And I had called two other people at the time, too. And I was just, I mean, my wife was like, I was in hysterics basically on the other end of the phone. And I sat there for almost 4 hours, she said. So, I couldn't go anyplace. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, the more I thought about it at the time, I'm like, you know, it might have just been better for me just to try and hoof it out of there and just get, just because the actual spot this, you know, you're thinking in retrospect, you're like, well, this creature wasn't too far away from your truck at any point during in the wood line someplace, probably. And
you know what? They could have had you, though, right?
Oh,
they could have had you.
They could have any time.
At that point when you're in the truck, you got to feel like, and you're not thinking about that, but you're thinking, okay, they're leaving me alone because to them I'm in something and it's, you know. But so it's 4 hours. So then the drive home, you know, you get home. Take us into psychologically. What the next few days were, hours after that, days, weeks, that sort of thing.
I know I called off work several days in a row. I just was, I was in totally panic stricken. I know for the next month, I can't tell you how many times at 1, 2 in the morning I'd wake up in a cold sweat and I'd have the pillow or whatever completely drenched. That happened a lot, and then I'd have to go in and take like a lukewarm shower just to make myself feel better. That happened all the time for the first couple months. And there's no way you're going to get me into the woods by myself at any time. I just can't even describe that to anybody. I mean, it's like I said, I mean, I had, and then in that area itself, I had tons of activity for the next 2 months. If I would have known what I know now, I could have had a lot of fun with this thing probably. But after,
I don't know about that.
Maybe not fun, but I mean, it's just experimenting, doing stuff, and seeing if things were, you know, scientifically thinking about, you know, a lot of people try, you know, like gifting and doing other things in the woods and stuff. I would have tried some stuff. We did have something happen to us that was quite remarkable that my wife came up with the one time we were.
Yeah, go ahead and tell about that because you mentioned that to me before. We're shifting to another time now, correct?
This was only 3 days later. Was only 3 days later. This was in the same the week. My kids had off spring break since it was it would have been middle, late March at that point. And my kids had off, and I remember them. My wife packing a lunch and everything. She's like, oh, no, we're going out there. We're going to check this place out. She goes, we're going to go out. This is when she hauled me out into the woods and, like, we got to go out there and see how, you know, measure how far you were. And she was in total belief because she was listening to me on the other end of the phone 3 days prior, and she knew darn well something bizarre really happened.
And it wasn't like you were having some kind of psychotic break and you're, you know.
She definitely knew something really happened. Because I would have never joked about something like this at all, because we would get in arguments about this all the time. This very topic, just because I thought it was so comical. And
so you're back there. You went back there 3 days later.
Oh, gosh, that was the first time back from my sighting. And, boy, that was the hardest thing to do all the way out was just a long, long drive. And I just contemplated. I'm like, I can't believe I'm going back out here again.
I don't anymore.
No, not at all. And I parked at the trailhead. Same scenario like I did 3 days prior. Except all three of the kids and my wife were along. So we got them out of the car, and she's trying to coerce me at best. I'm like, you know, I try to start going down this trail, and I'm like, I cannot do. I said, there's no way. And, man, I tell you what, some of the stuff we had happen going out there, it was unbelievable. But, you know, she got me to start walking down the trail and everything, and I don't remember who was where at the time. I think my daughter was ahead of us, if I remember correctly, and she noticed something on the trail. I'm not sure. But we got about a third of the way down the trail, and she's like, look at this. I'm pretty sure it was her that first noticed it, but I got up on this depression in the mud, and I'm like, it was a footprint as blatant could be. You could not miss this footprint if you wanted to. Toe markings, the whole nine yards. I'm like, holy, I just wanted to pass out right there. I mean, you could not have missed this. I mean, there's just no way. It was almost like it was purposely put in the middle of the trail. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever, I started turning around, going back towards the truck, and I'm like, I can't do this. I'm just going to have a panic attack. I just cannot take this anymore. And like I said, if I go too fast, just tell me.
Yeah, no worries.
But she's like, no. She's like, this is really cool. You know, she's just all into this. I'm like, oh, you have no idea what you're asking of me. And she gets me to walk all the way down the trail to where I was at. I go down to the ravine after a lot of coursing. And she's up on the trail with the kids. And, you know, I'm down there where I was standing. And she's like, okay. She's walking through the wood line. I'm telling her roughly where it was between the two trees. And take a tape measure and everything. We measure the area. Okay, we're down there maybe 10 minutes. Nothing happens. I don't notice anything else other than noticing that what looked like a footprint on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no whistles. There's no what, you know, people call rock clacking or sticks breaking or tree snapping. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Right.
I told her, I said, you know, I got to get out of here. I cannot take this anymore. I just can't take it. And I came up out of the ravine part ways, got up on level ground where they were at, and we started making our way back to the truck. I said, I just got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I tell you what, I made it about a third of the way down the trail, and right there smack in the middle of the trail is this big pile of green crap. I'm like, oh,
really?
My God. I lost it.
The same trail that you,
we were on? We just came down it, and there's no way I could have missed this green crap. I mean, it wasn't a huge pile, but it had really fine, like almost like rabbit fur. Whatever it was, it looked like rabbit fur, white rabbit fur, you know, in the poop. That's exactly what it looked like, fine rabbit hair.
You know what's weird is, not only were you the skeptic who's had a sighting, now you were the skeptic who went back a few days later and had another thing happen.
Oh, my gosh.
So people are probably going, oh, my gosh, really,
no,
dude?
I'm not doubting you.
I'm saying it's like you're getting the double whammy
my double whammy for the next month or two. But I mean, you know, but as soon as I saw that pile of poop, I'm like, I'm gone. I left my kids and everybody standing. I started bolting back to the truck. I said, I'm gone.
Now, let me ask you this too, right? Because there's people who, well, I'm a Bigfoot researcher and I would do this, I would do that. And they're going to say, well, Stacy, why didn't you get a sample of the poop? To which you will respond.
Man, I don't know anything about this stuff. I was complete.
Right.
You can't even call me an amateur Bigfooter at this point.
I didn't know.
The only person I notified of my sighting at this point was Don Keating, actually, who was in charge of the Ohio Bigfoot Conference at the time. He's the only person I reported my sighting to that week. Other than that, I hadn't gotten I hadn't met Tim Stover or some of the other people that I've told my sighting to and I got in contact with initially. I don't know what to do. I'm completely clueless.
Right.
All I know is I just got the literal crap scared out of me. And, I'm not thinking of scat retrieval. I'm not even thinking, retrospect, I would love to have gotten none. But, just in passing, I bolted for the truck. I mean, that was the first thing.
You know what, and Stacy, that wasn't a knock on you. That was more or less to put people in the realization and the mindset that
You can't think,
especially if you had this show, this happened 72 hours before, and you see this poop, you were just there, and you come back, and there's a steaming pile of crap I can't even recognize what it is. It's not a fox and squirrel and deer and what everything looks like. This is like, and then this experience with it, you can't expect somebody to, And this is what gets me, right? So somebody's in the scene. They're in the moment. Things are happening. Yeah, they should have stopped and got this. They should have done this. They
absolutely
should have gone back.
Yeah.
And you can't fault people, though, because they're scared. And to scared to a level that they've never been scared, they go from a 1 to a 100, and people will – and I guarantee you I'm going to get email on this saying, well, if it's real, why didn't he stop and get the poop? And why didn't he stop right after the sighting and get the footprint? You know what, really?
I probably
really.
in my old skeptical days, from the other side, I probably would say the same thing if I was listening to this. I really would. The problem is when you get this level of scare put into you, it's amazing. They've done studies on people of, you know, there's just no mind. I don't care if you got a PhD in this. You're not prepared. There is just no, and you're even talking to somebody that's got at least a little bit of science training, you know, and a little bit of, I would say, more than average curiosity as far as animals and nature and stuff like that, probably more than the average person. So, you know, I look back at it when other people tell me their sightings, I'm like, yeah, no, I get the scared thing. I really do. I can totally see why you did what you did. And
is there anything detail-wise that you might question yourself on now because of either the distance and time that it's been or your level of, amplified fear that you think, did I really see this or see that?
There were plenty of times afterwards that I would love to man, I tell you what, there have been plenty of times at home when I was by myself and my wife would go pick up the kids from school. I'd sit there and look out one of the windows at the house with my with my mug of coffee and be like, I didn't just see what I just saw. But then you would go back out in the woods and have stuff happen to you. And you're like,
and then you're questioning, right?
Oh my gosh, that thing is still here, and you're just like, actually, you can't, you know, it's a, you know. But I didn't even finish. Should I finish at least exactly what else happened by the time I?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I got you off track. We're just shooting.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm hoofing it back to the truck, right? And I'm leaving everybody in the dust behind me, and I get back to where the footprint is. And I'm like, holy crap. I get up to where the footprint is. Right next to the footprint is about a stack of probably 10 to 12 branches, 7 to 8 feet long, and probably about 12, maybe 18 inches high, blocking the trail.
Really?
That were not there, that you had to step over to get across the trail back to my truck, that were not there on the way down.
Now, do you realize how you are giving legitimacy to something that people have been saying for years about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, after I did so much reading for the first 6 months afterwards, and I'm like, oh, but all this happened to other people. Like, I've talked to a couple of people in the Pacific Northwest that have had, you know, encounters on trails like this before, and they've had sticks and branches and stuff, like, you know, blocking the trail and stuff in certain instances. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I'm like, boy, this is – it's just remarkable. But, you know, once I saw the stack of sticks, I was like, bye-bye, I'm gone. I moved even farther. I'm like, it's out here in the woods still, and my wife is just moving at a snail's pace, thinking.
How big were the sticks again?
I'd say somewhere between 12, 16, maybe even as high as 18 inches in some spots. But it was blocking the entire trail. They were like 7-8 foot long.
Oh, wow, okay. Gosh, and you didn't. So they must have just dragged those things. If it was the target species, so to speak, it must have just dragged those things out. Dude, how long did it take you before you went? Have you been back?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I've been back tons. I mean, that's been my kind of my basic research area, if you want to call it. But I mean, after the first year, after I got over that first year hump, I was much better. I got to be honest with you. When I get out of the car, there's that play that goes, I play it over in my mind, why are you even out here again? Or even if I go someplace else and I go bigfooting, squatching, whatever you want to call it.
I have a theory about that. I have a theory about why you're doing that, and you don't even realize it. I'll bet you, I mean, you've never had that shot of adrenaline like that before. You'll never have it again until you see one again. And I wonder if subliminally your body's like, I got to have
it. I can see your body maybe wanting something like that. For me, I know mentally up front, I'm such a nature freak. I'm like, boy, this is just a huge find. I mean, this is just this.
Yeah.
How many people get this opportunity? in your life, the more I was involved in this, and especially once we started doing the Bigfoot Tonight Show and talking to all these people and going to conferences and hearing other encounters and stuff with people. But, you know, I'll even go farther. I'll finish the rest of this encounter here for this 3 days afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
I make it to the truck. My wife finally makes it up with me with the children. She gets the crazy idea, well, we brought food along. We have bananas and apples and stuff along. So she gets one of the apples out of the cooler, and she's like, I said, what do you think you're doing? She goes, oh, I'm going to try something. I'm like, I don't know what you think you're going to try. I'm not going back in there. I said, it is pretty clear that thing is still around here. And she's like, oh, no. She goes, if you don't want to go with me, that's fine. She goes, I'm taking this apple. And I said, what are you going to do with this apple? She goes, just wait. She takes a beeline back down on the wood line. She's like not even, I mean, she's 5 foot. I'm 6'2". You know, go get.
Right.
I'm like,
go figure.
I'll stay here with the kids. Go right ahead. And in retrospect, I'm thinking, yeah, great protector I am. You know, it's like. She disappears out of sight eventually down the trail because it's got some curves on it. That's not a completely straight trail. And I'm like, what the hell did I just do? I just left my wife disappear into the wood line. And she's down there maybe 3-4 minutes, and then I see her come back up. And she took a picture of it, and she put an apple right next to that pile of crap, that pile of scat. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, she did. Yep. She goes, I said, well, I don't know, what did you just do? And she explained it. She goes, we're going to wait about 45 minutes or an hour. I said, then what are we going to do? She's like, we're going to go back down and see if anything happened to that apple. And I'm like, I'm not going back down.
Now, your daughter was with you at the time, right? Okay, gotcha. Where is she at this point? Is she still out in the woods?
No,
or is she playing around
the
truck?
She was in the truck with me. After they came, we came back out initially. She didn't go back down to the wood lawns. And I was...
Okay, so back to the apple.
No, that's fine. So we waited there an hour, and I'm like, I just couldn't even take being in this area much longer because it was pretty clear it was still around. And she gets the crazy idea to walk back down in after about 45 minutes or an hour and go back down, and she took pictures, and by God, she got down there, apple completely gone, scat completely gone, and a big, probably 2-3 foot area scooped out of the ground, leaves and all, where you can see this bare spot. This freaking thing had picked up its own scat, the apple, and all the leaves that were on the ground around it, 2 or 3 feet around it, and carried it off.
That is so...
You're just like, you can't even imagine, and you can't even imagine...
You can't even make that up.
No, you're like, there's no way it did this. Any four-legged animal, if it was going after the apple, there's going to be remnants around. That's not going to carry it off. And what's going to carry off, take off with it, something else's scat? I mean, that's not even, you know, that's not what a typical, your other, you know, fox, you know, other animals, but there has been black bear scat out in that area. I know there's black bear that go in there periodically. Mm-hmm. So I haven't actually seen one, but I've seen plenty of black bear scat. This didn't look anything like the black bear scat I've seen.
Speaking of black bear, do you want to punch somebody in the face when they dismiss these sightings?
Well, especially when mine was white from head to toe. Really? How many albino bears do you think are running around?
But you know what? I live up in the Northeast, and up in Maine, the sightings there are far and few between. There's not a lot, but the white ones are what's seen. I don't know what that means. I don't know if it could be a stage in life. You go gray and you die.
You're talking as far as Bigfoot goes? Well, it's really funny, you know, after I had my sighting and after I reported it to Don Keating and numerous other people, eventually getting in contact with people, it's funny, the Pennsylvania-Ohio border area is got quite a few sightings of gray and white Bigfoot sightings, and that's basically the area I was in. So it didn't really, you know, it really didn't collaborate my story, but it was kind of a nice thing knowing that general area, there were other like white Bigfoot database sightings that I've found and actually from heard verbally from talking to other people.
Speaking of database sightings, there's on the website, I'm just going to take a quick second to plug it here, it's BigfootGroundZero.org. Mm-hmm. If you go to it, there's a guy that I met on one of these Olympic Project expeditions, which, by the way, are legit. You can, you and I can have an offline conversation about this. I was really happy I went. He does something called Squatchometrics, and there is a database that he's populated that I have actually put up on the website under Maps and Legends. And Ohio is populated, and there's heat maps, and it shows you exactly where, you know, these sightings are. And I'm just wondering, if you go and look at it, just for grins when we're done here, just go pop it up, and you might go, man, I'm right in this area of where, because there's a swath of it, and you can see exactly where the sightings are happening. But, yeah, check that out, man, because, you know, there's got to be, and here's the thing, too. I don't know why Ohio is such a hotbed, like Salt Fork area, you know, all, there's been a ton of sightings.
I could probably tell you why.
Why do you think that
is? I don't think Ohio's got it. This is just my own personal opinion after being involved in this in 8 years. Mm-hmm. It does this, and everybody's entitled to theirs. It's like everybody says, I mean, to have a Bigfoot sighting, what do you need? You need a human being to report it, and you need a Bigfoot. I honestly don't think Ohio has that many compared to places like West Virginia, PA, you know, in other is densely populated states. Ohio has one thing, and it's got a lot more people. And I think it's a lot of people seeing the same Bigfoot. That's just my personal belief. I'm not saying, you know, day in and day out or whatever else, but I'm saying I just think, you know, we have the advantage in Ohio, I think, of having a lot of human beings on the road. Because if you look at the makeup of Ohio, especially map-wise, even your some of your backcountry roads, compared to something like an older state like Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is a lot more mountainous. The way those roads were designed over there are not like Ohio. I mean, I can go in Ohio. If you want me to put in a destination on my GPS, I can go anywhere in the state and probably find 9 or 10 different routes to it. There's roads galore compared to PA or some of these other states, or even West Virginia. I mean, look at the mountains and stuff you have to go around. You know, do we have more Bigfoot than West Virginia or like Kentucky or someplace? No, I don't think so at all. I think the big thing is you've got roads to have access to see sightings. How many sightings do you see somebody reports they're in a car and a Bigfoot shoots across the road? You know, and they're simply not even out Bigfooting. They're just in their car. But, you know, it's
80%. It's something like 80% of sightings.
Yeah, and,
road
you know, in that scenario, Ohio's got a lot more roads. It just does. And I think that the areas that are supposedly reported to have Bigfoot activity are just easily, they're just more accessible, I think, than some of the other surrounding states. That's just my own personal belief.
That's a really good observation. I had an opportunity to sit in on a talk that Dr. Meldrum gave about the Patterson-Gimlin film. And he was pointing out the certain intricacies of the things with the creature. And the more you look at it, you're like, geez, yeah, these tendons do flex. And this, you know, and he goes through this whole thing. But then during that, too, he talks about the likelihood that there aren't as many Sasquatch out there as we might think.
Yeah.
And it kind of says, I mean, you've probably been saying this all along, too, but that's starting to become more and more of the consensus. But as I'm talking, I'm realizing that I stepped on the last part of your story again. As you were finishing off with the apple gone.
Oh, well, no, after the apple was gone and everything was scooped up and that picture was taken, I'm like, I'm not hanging around this place anymore. This is just crazy.
Sure.
But, I mean, we took off for home after that, and I barely could drive most of the way home, which was typical. Every time we went out, we had something happen for those first 2 months. And I can honestly tell you, that was through like May of 2009, and I've gone out to that area a million times and not a doggone thing now.
So there could be a thing where there's a migration I always look at the woods like it's a big grocery store for animals. They don't have to stay in one area if they don't want to, and they'll be gone.
No, I just, I think, you know, like I've got friends that live down south that are Bigfooters, like in Texas and Louisiana and stuff, you know, you're seasonal changes aren't as extreme. So food sources are probably a little bit more, you know, more accessible, especially if you get you go to places like Alabama or Arkansas that have all these marsh and swamps and stuff. There's so much, you know, with water comes tons of food. So, I mean, you know, it just makes more sense that these, you know, people talk like even about habituations or maybe even these creatures hanging around on properties for longer. I think that stuff probably would be more likely down south where you don't have extreme seasonal changes. I think you would have to travel potentially up north, probably greater distances to find your food sources and the like. But like I said, that's just my opinions. But yeah, I've gone out in this area and I've not found, I mean, you know, we would go out there on, we'd drop the kids off at school after the spring break was over, those first 2 months, and we'd go out there along the trail. I'd find like breaks and stuff at the 6, 7, 8 foot level that like these branches that were twisted and rotated and stuff.
Now, let me ask you about that. Because it's very interesting that you say that. Now, you're going into an area. Do you feel like now you're getting sucked in into all these probabilities because you're hypothesizing about those, or you're getting drawn in based on what you? Because there's that fine line between Stacy Hostetler, the 10-year-old kid, and then Stacy Hostetler, the grown man, you know, scientist.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I mean, I was trying to be real. I mean, my wife brought me back to reality quite a bit. She was much more rational about it because I was still having, you know, nightmares and stuff about it. But, you know, the problem is when you go out there in an area and you see pretty large branches, nice and yellow inside, the fiber's still hanging from them. And the outside of the bark is really dark. And you can tell something did something. I had stones thrown at me through the wood line. Had that happen a couple times. I've had blatant wood knocks in this area. And that was within the first 2 months. And, I mean, I'm talking blatant wood knocks. I'm talking like somebody took a Louisville Slugger and smacked the crap out of the side of it. I'm talking loud.
Right.
And it echoed for, quite a distance. And found a large bedding area with something clearly was matted down a large group of weeds in the middle of this field. Something definitely was lying in this area, we found. I mean, just all kinds of, every time we went out there, and then, like, right around the middle of May that year, I mean, I would go out there, nothing. I've done it repeatedly at the same time of the year, every year up until this point, and nothing. You know, you don't see any new breaks, you know, twists, or anything, you know, that might be associated with any of these creatures at all. I don't see anything that remotely looks like a footprint. I don't see anything. So,
I have to tell you, it's going to be the next program. I have David Ellis from the Olympic Project. I don't know if you have you guys had a chance to meet at all.
Oh yeah, like Derek Randall. Yes, I know David very well, and we had him on the show several times, I believe. And
I got to tell you, he is the he's the guy that keeps me in check on things, right? Because I'm so excited about this, and I think that's why I like Chuck so much. Because
when you listen to him talk on the show, it was like, you know, you could hear his inflections in his voice. He would slowly go up and get all excited about. He was all in.
He was all in. Absolutely. But you know, David keeps me in check. But when we're done with this, I'm gonna air some sounds next week that we recorded, and it's funny that you say all of these things because we clearly heard heavy sticks on trees whack out of, and you think to yourself, okay, we're way out in the woods here on in the, you know, Olympic Mountain National Forest right on the edge there. What the hell picks up something and hits it against a tree? Okay, that's the first thing, and this is really happening now. You're in it and you're not. This is one of those things you're there while it's happening. So it's not you're on the other side of a podcast or listening to a television show or something. And we had incidents like you say, like that whistling, and then there was more whistling behind you and, you know, communication, whatever. I'm just saying this is what happened. There was an area we went through, and I'm going to play these sounds, where we're walking up with the group. And I know what people are going to say. They're going to say, okay, this is planned. But I can tell you, I'm the biggest skeptic. I'm not going to go on this podcast and say, you know, I'm not going to throw myself out there, you know, willy-nilly. But I can tell you, that we were in an area that if somebody was going to hoax us, would have had to work extremely hard to get through the most dense brush probably I've ever seen in this area.
Chuck and I, when we did the show, I mean, the Olympic Project, I mean, those guys worked their butts off retrieving trail cam. I have the biggest, just the most respect for Derek and the whole group of guys that they, man, I mean, they're hoofing through stuff I wouldn't have the energy to do. I just wouldn't have the ability to do it.
Well,
I just wouldn't.
And I'm tying your story together, and it kind of makes me think, okay, that I heard what I heard, and there could be some validity, because I'm always got to be the skeptic. And that's what those guys taught me over that, you know, 3 or 4 days I was there. Like, look, you don't believe your ears. You have to see it in sonic visualizer. You have to look at things. And it was good for me to really ground me on this. But we're walking up this fire road or whatever it is, and this clear cut down below us, you know, 300 or 400 feet, whatever. As the clear cut ends and it goes into the bushes, we're still going up onto the left of this road. The area we heard this sound came from that really, really dense area that Derek and Shane and David have seen thermal FLIR images coming in and out of their walking, right? So we get up there, and all of a sudden, Cindy Cadell says, "Hey, did you guys hear that? It was a knock." And I got that off the recorder because I had one of those Roland's recording. Actually, Todd Hale got it off of his. And you can hear us talking. She says, "Whack." And she says, "You guys hear that?" And none of us heard it. Literally, maybe 30 seconds later, we're talking around the campfire and you hear a whoop. And when you amplify it for audio, and this is what I've learned also, it changes the texture a little bit, right? So that whoop, it sounded like one of those whoop and just cuts off after about 2 seconds. But on the audio, it sounds more like a more of a thin whoop. But man, it's almost like something announcing they're here. It's just bizarre. Stacey, it was just really bizarre. That's all I can tell you. And then there was a later on that night at just before 3 p.m., it was 2:50 a.m., David got the most remarkable howl. And I'm going to send this to you via email when we're done. And folks, you're listening, I'm not trying to be a jerk here. We'll get to it on the next episode, I promise. But I don't want to steal David's thunder because he was the one that recorded that.
He's had some great audio.
Here.
We've had some of his audio on the show before.
It's unbelievable. So I'm going to play those. But I could really – I got to tell you, and I don't want to go down that road of, man, I just believe. But there's something about that area – that based on the sounds and the history, and I talked to the folks that live there, and they're just like, yeah, there's sightings all the time. Like, people talk about it. I saw this, I saw that. And when you're there and you hear these sounds, it just makes you want to work a little harder to find out what the truth is. And I've not had the sighting, but does that make sense? That area is so rich with sightings and sounds and everything that when you go there, there's just a certain
that whole coastal area. I've got friends up in BC, and you know, that's just an extension of that whole coastline. There's just a lot of stuff there. I mean, there's just and you know, the thing I got to give them kudos more for, I mean, they got a lot more dangerous animals to run into than I got in Ohio. I mean,
yeah,
grizzly
cougars
potential
being one.
Too. Oh my gosh! You're really, and you know, you just in the mountains they've got there. I mean, what we would consider good sized hills here in Ohio, and there are some decent areas, or maybe small foothills to something out there.
it's crazy. You got to be in some sort of shape too. I was a little huffing and puffing when I was there, but. I mean, and it was wet. I mean, it was wet the whole time. And I'm thinking, geez, you know, this is old growth. This is truly a rainforest. So if there's some, you know, relic hominid out there that is, you know, I mean, who knows? So anyway, man, I got to tell you, I'm up against the clock. But I really, really appreciate your time. I've been wanting to get this interview for a long time.
No
so
problem.
I appreciate your patience and, you know, finally giving it to me. You know, hopefully we can do it again. But I've got to get out to the Ohio Bigfoot Conference because I keep saying I'm going to do that, and then the time comes and I forget, and it's like, ah.
Well, let me know, and I'll definitely set some time aside. We can go out and do it.
Yeah.
I've actually got some access to a thermal and stuff now, so it makes Bigfooting at night quite a bit more interesting, at least fun,
nice.
Just from that aspect. So.
Yeah, Yeah, so we'll definitely do that. But you know, if you like, I'm gonna go ahead and email you those sounds. I'd like to get their take on it. And folks, you're listening, you'll hear those next week. But they're definitely great. If you want to contact Stacy, just hit me up on BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com, BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. More than happy to put you in touch. I don't want to put people in touch with you directly, but you know, if there's things that questions they have, I'm more than happy.
Can send the questions. It'd be just as easy as you can send them private message through Facebook, and I can relay them back to you if you want to do that. That's fine.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, no,
like I said before, anybody that wants to remain skeptical on the other side, I was there once before. I totally get it. It totally makes sense. So
absolutely, and probably at this point, when you go to dinner with friends, they're like, "Yeah, Stacy, I get it."
Yeah, no, and the nice thing when I've told my encounters to a lot, I have a lot of doctors that know what I do at the hospital, and they're always asking.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that I think believe more than you think there are. There are a lot. We're talking professionals.
Oh, yeah.
We're not talking your average run of the. And I'm not knocking the average, average Joe. I'm just saying, if these guys are willing to put some of their, when you're talking officers of the law. I mean, I've had rangers. I've had police locally here tell me their stories before. When you get there, when you're willing to come forward and do stuff like that, I get a couple doctors telling me of their encounters and stuff. They're going to be a little bit more skeptical to open up. They're not going to be. They've got a lot to lose sometimes if some of those stories get out.
Well, yeah, and it's funny that you say that. When I told some of my coworkers I was going out to do some squatching with the OP, that some of them were like, "Oh, that's great. They knew who it was and everything." But some, poked fun at me. But off to the side, they'd kind of pull me aside and go, "Dude, you really think that's real?" Because they're always curious, but on the face of it, they want to knock
absolutely.
You for it. But it's hilarious, People have the curiosity. So, hey, brother, I'll get going. I really appreciate your time. I'll definitely catch up with you anyway on the side because I got to, a couple of questions for you research wise that
I don't want
secrets out. But let me catch up with you. Otherwise, thanks again, and we'll look forward to talking to you down
appreciate
the road.
It. Okay, bye.
All right, brother, take care. All right, that was our interview with Stacy Hostetler. Stacy, thanks again for coming on. If you guys want to get a hold of Stacy, I'm more than happy to do that. Just email me at BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com, BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can hear us on Stitcher. Just go download the app and you can hear all the shows. I will be doing iTunes quickly, but like I said, there's a bit of a process to that, so might take me a little bit of time. Also, Bigfoot Ground Zero on Facebook, check in from time to time. Feel free to post anything as well. I did leave that open to the public for participation. But as I had promised, sounds from the Pacific Northwest, 3 a.m. It's recording early in the morning on the expedition while we were out there, courtesy of David Ellis of the Olympic Project. Again, learned a lot. It was fun. I'll leave you with these sounds. And don't forget, Bigfoot Ground Zero is a part of the Bigfoot Worldwide Radio Network.